for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, December 17th, 2004, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, handheld hardware with our San Francisco correspondent, Chris Dunphy. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join a conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go to geekspeak.org. Click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, Java programmer, web developer, and student of American literature, Chris Dunphy, from former director of competitive analysis for Palm Source and now chief installer dude for Palm Source, and John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
It is good to be back.
Chief installer dude. I want a title like that.
Well, I'm just kind of making it up as I go along. So,
before we get into today's show on handheld technology, some geek news. Miles, let's start with you.
I'll start with the security problems. Of course, start with the bad news first. Internet Explorer has a new cross-site scripting vulnerability.
Internet Explorer has a security problem?
That was last week's news. You're reading some old news.
Yeah, broken record. So, anyway, the way to mitigate this problem is either turning off ActiveX controls altogether, which entails going into security settings, setting the security level to high for the internet zone, disabling ActiveX support, and this whole long to-do, or download an alternate browser such as Opera, Firefox, or Mozilla.
I want a spaceship one, Firefly. Miles, when you say just do that, if you were to go ahead and spend the time and figure out how to disable ActiveX and disable the other security problems in Internet Explorer, is there any other reasons to go with another browser besides Internet Explorer? I mean, is it really just a security issue?
Well, aside from the fact that we seem to almost weekly say there's a security problem with this particular browser, another reason is tabbed browsing, blocking pop-ups in the default install, a few other niceties. Firefox has extensions. But in general, I would recommend the other browsers.
Security. And since the security is all the time, it's kind of like you might as well be doing it all the time.
Right.
Okay, so you recommend going to a different browser, and here's another reason to do that. So Mozilla.org is a great resource for a free browser on almost any operating system. And Firefox is the lighter version of that.
Right. Thank you. Opera.com, I believe, is
Opera.com is the Opera version. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Miles, for that. John, I'd like to go with you for news, sir.
In the news today, we have Apple and Real Networks going at it yet again.
The gloves are off?
The gloves are completely off. Apple has announced that the next generation of its iPod music player, which is the iPod iPhoto, version, the photographic version, hold your photographs, will actively block Real Networks' attempts to make the player more open. Apple charges that Real has been actively hacking the iPod so that music you download from Real Networks will work on the iPod. Apple doesn't like this, of course, because they want you to buy from their iTunes music store,
right?
Which is directly competing with Real Networks' music store.
Is Apple going to make a change to their protocol?
Apple is changing the software so that you cannot load Real Networks music. Music that you purchase from Real Networks store will not work at all on the new generation of iPods, the photo generation and beyond.
Why do that? That just seems like such a...
It's marketing.
Yeah.
It's you know, they're... Apple is the 800-pound gorilla of...
Wait,
of the music
stop right
now.
There. That's just such a weird sentence to say.
Well, okay.
Apple's
iTunes Store has now sold 200 million songs as of now. It took about a year for the first 50 million to sell. Took another 4 months for the next 50 million. Up to the 150 million mark was done in 3 months later. and the last 50 million has been in 2 months. Right. So it's definitely an upward curve, and other people are really looking to get a piece of that.
Other companies, yeah. So basically, we're seeing for the first time, really, Apple being a major player in a market and being able to control market and be doing the same things that Microsoft's been doing to Apple forever.
They're forcing
other companies not to use their technology, not to be able to fit into their systems.
I think this is some lessons Apple's learned hard.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's unfortunate. You know, I like to see them as more of a soul than this, but, you know, money wins out.
Well, thank you for that soul report, John. Chris Dunphy?
Well, see, the only news I'm carrying around in my head is a little known big announcement from last week is PalmSource is going to become a Linux company. We bought a...
PalmSource, the company you work for,
yeah.
Palm used to be one company and split off to the hardware side and the software side. You work for the software side, PalmSource.
Exactly.
You had a proprietary operating system forever that runs and compiles onto Palm devices and other devices that lease the technology basically from you. And so now you're going open source. Why?
If you kind of like look at the computer industry, there is the big giant development effort happening from this big monopolist company somewhere up in, I don't know, I forget where they're at.
Redmond, Washington.
Oh, yeah, those guys. And, you know, they've got like insane amounts of engineering resources to work on core operating system stuff. And then there's like the entire rest of the world throwing their hat behind open source and developing Linux and doing all sorts of amazing things based on top of Linux. And, you know, if you're not on one camp or the other, you know, why bother? We've got all sorts of cool stuff that happens on top of the operating system level, and we're going to, in future versions of the Palm OS, build on top of a Linux foundation.
Now, there's already a kernel that compiles for Palm-type hardware. So is that what you're going to be using? Or are you going to be writing? Are you going to kind of take the kernel and kind of what's your base, and is it going to be open source?
Yeah, so we're going to be using standard Linux kernels. We bought a company in China called China Mobile Soft that has a version of Linux called MLinux that they've been working on that is a very mobile optimized version.
Is it open source?
It is, of course it's open source.
Okay.
You have no choice in Linux world.
Uh-huh.
So that's going to be the foundation, but we also would work with MontaVista or any other companies that do mobile versions of Linux. You know, we're going to be kernel agnostic, and we'll sell the higher level part of the operating system. The stuff users see won't change at all.
What will this mean to users, really?
To a user really shouldn't care what's under the hood in an appliance type device. Like a lot of things, like my new network hard drive has Linux inside. You would never know unless you like dug deep into the documentation. And you know, TiVo has Linux inside since the very beginning. It's the stuff under the hood matters to some developers and to device builders. It makes it a lot easier for device builders to get drivers and do some of the stuff there. But to a user, it doesn't make a difference.
Great.
It's
okay.
Just cool.
Thanks for the update from Swamp.
And you'll be allowed to have, like, penguin stickers for the back of your future handhelds.
And that's good.
Yeah.
You always want a penguin sticker. Thank you, Chris, very much for that. Miles, sir?
Canada looks to be dropping a copyright tax on MP3 players. Currently, MP3 players have to pay a levy to the Recording Industry Association of America.
I didn't know that.
And jumps up the price. It's similar to
the motion amount of picture money, or
the Recording Industry Association.
Okay. Soon
America,
to be the motion
RIAA.
Picture.
No. And it's similar to the tax that's or the levy that's on CDs, blank CDs.
Is this just a Canadian levy, or does this happen in the U.S. also?
This is in the U.S. I believe as well. However, the big news is that Canada looks to be dropping it soon. An appeals court ruled that special copyright levies applied to digital music players are not legal.
So
this is actually a yet another sign of Canada moving toward digital rights for individuals rather than for the RIAA.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Miles, for that little update. I've got one. I thought it was kind of interesting. Recently, Miles wrote a little article to all of us in our email. And first thing that John and I were noticing is that Miles was not capitalizing internet. And so John made a reference before I did. And then Dee Dee from New York and Miles both responded with, actually, no, the internet shouldn't be capitalized anymore. So what? What's going on? So there's a Wired article dated August 16, 2004, that talks about how there's no real need to capitalize internet or web when you just use it singular, or net. It shouldn't be capitalized. It should be lowercase. So we have a little debate here right now. Miles, what's the gist of the story? Why would you not capitalize internet?
So does this mean the internet has been downgraded?
No, and you may think of, for example, the internet or the web as being a proper noun, and yet we don't capitalize the phone system or television or, you know, the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are, it's simply a different medium, especially when you have, for example, UCSC is on Internet 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of us are on Internet 1. Some folks are on IP version 6 and IP version 4. It's not like it's also one entity. It's a lot of interconnected networks, not to mention the private networks behind NATs and stuff like that. So there, it's not something that, in general, you would consider a proper noun. It's actually just a general term.
Corporate style sheets all over the place. Even university style sheets, style guides on naming nomenclature and things of that nature, all have it really still Internet with a capital I. Is it just kind of the momentum? You think it's really going to switch over?
I can't speak for anyone else. Wired has switched over. I heard their arguments for it. I thought that they were compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as what anyone else changed it to, you know, there are some folks that really push for. You know, there some random piece, or more specific case, is there's some style guides that, and most style guides, that enforce that God must be capitalized.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there are a lot of places that don't.
Okay.
So,
you know, so even if you put the Internet in front of it, shouldn't it be capitalized then? When you're talking about it as kind of a proper noun?
Or if we're on the radio, do you capitalize radio?
No, definitely not.
See, I think you remove the capital I, you're opening yourself up to all the kind of IM chat stuff that's going to just seep into our language. You're not going to be able to spell anything properly anymore. You're going to say you are, it's going to be spelled you are.
Right, and for all those out there, if you might want to go to a dictionary and look up slippery slope fallacy, it's a logical construct that you want to avoid.
I'm just worried about the cost of this. It's going to cost billions of dollars to reprint the documentation for the Internet, you know, just to change that.
All right. Well, I think that I think officially we'll endorse the non-capitalization as long as John gives me a nod on that. John is going to refuse. Okay, we're still in debate.
The official owner of the Internet, what John about, Tracy, says no.
What about net? The net. Can we not capitalize net, John?
We cannot capitalize it, but you have to put a G in front of net.
Okay. Silent G, net is not capitalized. Thank you very much, John.
See, I got my baseball bat in the trunk. I'm just going to be waiting for you and your kneecaps.
Come on,
now,
man.
Miles
ready.
Is the English major literature.
Yeah, but I've been wrong on air a couple of times, so that's not saying
wow, that. I've never been wrong on air. Okay, so.
Really? I always just make stuff up.
That's how you're not wrong. You're like, I'm making this up, so I know it's a joke anyway. Not a big deal. Miles, thanks for that debate about Internet capitalization. Let's fill in one more news story.
While we're talking about words, yeah. I've got the new word for the week. It's tychonaut. Tychonaut. Everyone say it. Tychonaut.
It's like Tycho toys.
No. Tychonaut.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything until you acknowledge lowercase I.
Go on, John.
Yes, lowercase I does exist. And there is a lowercase
I. Mass
measure
number.
Okay, tychonaut is the Chinese counterpart for astronaut and cosmonaut. It comes from the Chinese word taikong, which it means space,
mm-hmm.
and not. Which means
is
not space. No.
Which is what everybody else is using for the astronaut,
right.
Cosmonaut.
Okay. Right. So we now have astronauts, cosmonauts, and tychonauts.
And the reason we're addressing Chinese tychonauts is because they are now in space now.
They have actually done a successful launch. They have an astronaut, a tychonaut, who spent 21 hours orbiting the Earth and came down safely. And in 2005, they're planning a much longer extended mission. So... yeah.
Okay.
China has
astronauts,
become a space
astronauts,
plant.
And cosmonauts. Thank you, John. With that, we're going to go. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxel. The geeks this morning are Sean. Sean's not here. He's the one geek that's not here. John Tracy, Miles Elam, and our special correspondent geek, Chris Dunphy. Geeks, we're going to stop the news now and go off to talk more with Chris about, get ready for this, handheld devices. Chris, what's new in the handheld arena? You've got a plethora of devices in front of us.
Yeah, I kind of raided my toy box before I came out here today. And actually,
wait, with your new title position, is this going to change? You're not going to be able to get these neat toys?
You know, I'm not going to have nearly as much access to the cool new toys. I'm going to be doing different stuff now.
Wow, so do you view this as a step up or a step down?
This is cool. I get to build stuff. My old job was kind of like the guy in the mast of a sailing ship saying, hey, there's pirates over there and land ho over there. And you know, now I'm actually going to get to steer the ship a little bit. So it's kind of exciting.
So you get to decide if you want to go fight the pirates or...
Yeah, that's what like, pirates, no, run away. yeah, so it's a different job, and it's kind of fun.
So you're actually kind of steering this whole section of Palm now.
I'm working on ways to make it easier for people to get software and download software.
Is this Linux thing? Is this your baby?
I have been helping with the Linux thing. That's kind of a bigger corporate strategy. But since I'm from an ex-Linux company, I like knew the lingo and I could speak Linuxese and talk to open source people without getting them too pissed off. So yeah, it's been fun.
So So these devices here, this is the last time we're going to see this kind of thing?
No, I'll still read the toy box.
Okay, guys. Good. Yeah, all right, so let's talk a little bit about what's hot. The N-Gage has actually been out for a while. I'm holding this one. It's by Nokia, little handheld gaming device. What do you think about it?
The N-Gage is a... can you say crap on the radio?
You just did.
yeah. No. The N-Gage is if you take all the like great ideas about what a gaming device should be and then implement them badly, that's what the N-Gage is.
All right. Let's toss that one aside. No N-Gage.
But on the gaming front, things I don't have because I haven't been able to get my hands on them is the Nintendo DS looks really, really cool. It is sold out everywhere for Christmas. People are lined up around the blocks in Japan to buy them and such. And that's a really, really cool, hot device. It's a dual-screen Nintendo Game Boy that flips open, has built-in Wi-Fi and wireless networking, has a touch screen, and it introduces the concept of dual-screen gaming, which is a...
And if you've got lots of money, it's a good gift for Christmas?
It's like $150.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. It's a lot of technology.
Is it backwards compatible with the...
It'll run Game Boy Advance and Game Boy cartridges as well as new Nintendo DS games. So that's if you can get your hands on one, that's going to be a really cool... You know, get it for Christmas and have fun on the bus.
Yeah. All right. What's the stack of stuff in front? What's your coolest thing right now? What do you like? Or what's one of the things you like?
I didn't bring the cool stuff down.
You didn't bring your cool stuff? This is the junk I don't mind you breaking.
So the thing you just picked up there, that came out a few months
T-Mobile.
Ago. This is technologically a pretty impressive thing. It's the iPac 6300. This is the first device that you can buy that has Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and GPRS cell phone network connectivity all at once.
So it's a phone, it's a handheld, it's everything.
It's got the world's smallest camera. Keyboard. Oh, my God.
Yeah, the keyboard makes it about an inch or so thick. So
it makes a RIM BlackBerry look large. The keyboard, I mean.
Oh, yeah. The keyboard's small. The device is... big and huge.
Is that okay that it's big and huge?
With mobile devices, you know, size and elegance is all important.
Can I make one complaint? And I'd like to make this complaint to you, not necessarily the affiliation you have with Palm Source. These things are all like dead. They're not charged.
You know, when I went to Miles' house last night, we were just hanging out, and I forgot to plug everything into charge. So Miles did not provide electricity. Yeah.
Miles is too entertaining for our own good. All right, so the iPac.
Some of them are charged.
And what kind of networks does this phone work on?
So that T-Mobile is selling that. T-Mobile's the only network that's selling that right now in the U.S. So T-Mobile's network.
All right. And it's powered by, it looks like, Microsoft.
Yeah, so this you end up with some interesting little side effects of the bugs that come from using a Microsoft operating system here. See how the keyboard clips on?
Yeah.
If you bring up the built-in Instant Messenger and put it into full screen mode... Since the clip-on keyboard wasn't part of the operating system Microsoft defined, it still thinks you want to use the on-screen keyboard. So every time you start to type a line, the on-screen keyboard pops up and then minimizes.
Uh-huh.
And you can't get around that. That's a bug in the operating system.
At least it minimizes.
But your screen, your window is resizing.
All the time.
Yeah, because it's going from the little keyboard you're typing on to, I need the on-screen keyboard because he wants to type.
Look forward to a patch coming soon to you.
Like a toaster.
Just to let you know, the Nintendo DS is selling upwards of $400 on eBay right now.
Yeah, so see, if you'd been like a Nintendo speculator and bought like crates of them, you'd be making a fortune right now, doubling your money.
The Nintendo one? Okay.
And on the mobile gaming front, the Sony PSP just went on sale in Japan last week. That's Sony's handheld gaming device. And that one's also sold out completely. It's not coming to the U.S. until sometime probably March or April.
Wow.
So handheld gaming is going to be a big, big fun, technology is coming and getting cooler.
All right. That's good to know. The other device that you got, we talk a lot about, John had a little story about how Apple's kind of trying to destroy the competition on handheld music. The iPod, this is the larger version of the current selling iPod. What do you think of it for an MP3 player?
The iPod, other than Apple trying to be evil about owning your music and stuff, the iPod is a really brilliant piece of hardware. It just works simply. It does what it's supposed to do. It syncs. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to be a geek to use it.
But can you buy them?
But even geeks can use it. That's the cool thing.
Can you buy them?
Can you buy iPods? Yeah, they're everywhere.
No, so, actually, they're getting harder and harder to find.
Really?
Right now. I was in Circuit City buying a car adapter the other day, and people were asking, do you have the 40-gig iPod? Nope, we're sold out. Do you have the 20-gig? No, we're sold out. Do you have the 30? No, we're sold out. Do you have the mini? No, we're sold out, which is pretty much the entire iPod line.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're getting scarce this Christmas.
Yeah, which makes sense.
And the rumor mill says that Apple's maybe coming out with a flash RAM version. Have you heard anything about that?
No.
I saw a great edited Photoshop thing for this flash iPod, which is very small looking. But no, Apple hasn't said anything. But though Apple is making deals with people that have flash RAM.
So this could be like the, you know, they get even smaller, you know, like the iPod earrings, you know, just clip them on your ear and you got your music right there,
as long
no
as
wires.
Bluetooth enabled for technology. can you turn this thing off? I can't seem to turn this thing off.
It goes to sleep.
Okay, it goes to sleep.
Or if you hold down paused. If you hold down the pause button for 2 seconds or so, if while the screen is not locked, it will turn off. Yeah.
Okay,
so,
that's good.
So only geeks can actually turn off the iPod, but non geeks can listen to music plenty.
How's the battery life on these things? Are they still is the battery life still horrible?
iPod battery life's okay.
No, they've gotten upwards of 12 hours now.
No, I meant like before you have to throw the iPod away or get a new battery.
You know what? There's actually, you can buy a new battery.
Okay.
You can buy generation one batteries for like $30 now and a kit and instructions.
That's not bad.
You know, I have a quick plug for a book that we got to review.
Yeah, I wanted to have you talk about
it's
that.
It's called iPod Hacks. Oh my God. iPod and iTunes Hacks, and it is great. It tells you how to convert your iPod into an IR transmitter.
Infrared?
Infrared transmitter.
Like your remote control?
Exactly. You make it an ultra-universal remote. It shows you how to... It's got a hack, you know, how to build a cardboard case for your iPod.
For protection?
It's got how to mount it permanently into your car. And it goes through how to make a clay mold of where the iPod's going to sit, how to make a fiberglass mold of that, and then how to cast it in plastic, and
amazing.
Then how to finish it up. Oh, my God.
Amazing.
Yeah, and it's got diagnostic stuff. How to get into the secret diagnostic part of the iPod and what the different codes mean so you can see what's wrong with your iPod, how to change batteries, all that. Anyway, we'll be posting a review up in probably a week or so. I'll be posting a review of the book up, so check out geekspeak.org later on.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool. And that's by O'Reilly, and if you know somebody that really loves their iPod, great gift for them would be this book from O'Reilly. It's called iPod and iTunes Hacking.
Hack.
It's the Hack series about being a little more geeky, I guess, with your technology. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronics parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
Bird. Gideon. It terrifies her children. It chases them.
One time she just almost bited off my phone.
It's very, very loud. Like dinosaur loud.
Do you understand why Mommy loves Gideon?
No.
How we can love something that maybe we shouldn't this week.
This American Life, Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
The Santa Cruz Museum of Natural History presents the 30th Annual Fungus Fair, Saturday and Sunday, January 8th and 9th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the London Nelson Community Center. Call the museum...
Nelson.
Okay. Has it listed as London. Call the Museum of Natural History for information at 420-6115.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz, from Cruz.io. Providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL, and now with nationwide access, information about Cruz.io membership is available online at cruz.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio KOSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are John Tracy, Miles Elam, and Chris Dunphy. Please join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can also use the internet. Visit geekspeak.org. Click on the contact us to send us email, and I hope we're checking email right now. But let's, while we're waiting for calls to come in, we should go ahead and keep on talking about these handheld things. If you have made a recommendation to someone who wanted to buy something for like a teenager, what would you recommend for a gift this year under the $200 range? Got any ideas?
Gift, mobile gadget gift. There's always every teenager needs a cell phone nowadays.
That's true.
You know, whatever good, cheap color screen cell phone with a camera you can get plenty of them for under $200 now, so that's a fun way to go.
So you recommend not getting a cell phone unless it has a camera at this point?
The camera is next to useless, but it's, you know, all the cool kids have it, so you probably want it too.
Can you even buy a phone without a camera today?
It's getting harder and harder. There's actually, I think in Japan now you really can't, unless you get like the special enterprise ones that are, you know, because you'll get fired if you take a phone with a camera into certain jobs.
Interesting. So they're having to make a whole segment of cell phones just if you work in this secure kind of area, here's the phone you have to
buy. You pay extra to get the camera removed. It's getting kind of bizarre.
It's actually just a piece of duct tape.
It'd be great if you could like take your phone and just unplug the camera and drop it off at the checkout counter or something.
Well, actually, you know, some of the cheaper phones that support cameras use clip-on cameras, which then you have to carry around with you, so it kind of defeats the whole purpose of having a, you know, a little basic camera built into your phone that you could snap with. You could just have a little basic camera that you can lose on the bus.
All right. So you don't have any. What about recommendations for like an MP3 player? Do you think there's a good under $200 MP3 player out there?
Actually, if you're looking for like a basic MP3 player, you can get one of the cheaper Palm devices, and they all play MP3s now, so get one of those and a flash RAM card, and you know, as a gift for a student or something, they could keep their schedule, keep their contacts, keep their track their homework, and then also they can listen to music and use it as an MP3 player. So that's a great universal gift.
And there are ones for under $200.
Oh yeah. I believe the Palm, Zire 31 is
that's kind of low end.
It's a low end color, about $150, but it will also work as an MP3 player.
How much memory does that give you? For music storage.
So to do music, then you have to buy SD cards, and so that's an extra cost. You can buy them as big as you want. You can get a, I know there was a gigabyte SD cards for around $40 at Fry's not too long ago.
So. But a gigabyte of music, that's a lot of music.
A gigabyte of music is a decent amount.
Yeah. 500 megs of music is probably okay, considering you can just sync it every night and get new music on it.
Exactly.
Or have a couple of these cards.
Right.
When you said SD, what type of memory is that?
SD's a little...
He's gonna pop one out. It's a flat one, right?
Yeah, they're about the size of a postage stamp and not much thicker. Easy to lose, but they are fun little memory cards.
Well, we're gonna take a call from Paso Robos. We have Dave. Got a question, I guess, about how to fix Norton. Please, Dave, what's your question from Paso Robos?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
The thing is that I set my calendar ahead to December to check a date and forgot to set it back. And then I went and downloaded the Norton protection.
Uh-huh.
And when it downloaded it, it put the December 26/04 date into the software somewhere.
Okay.
So that when I went to load it, it won't let me load it.
What error does it give you?
It does load it, and then it says you must shut off your computer before it'll work. Well, of course, I've shut off my computer
multiple times,
dozens of times, right?
All right, Geeks, got any recommendations for Dave?
Well, first off, a general bit of advice is you should never change the date on your computer, and you should always try and make sure the date and the time are correct, because a lot of software bases their security protection and stuff locking down to the date, and you can cause all sorts of bad and unpredictable behavior if you have strange dates in your system.
You know, funny as this is, I think Dave might know this at this point.
Oh, yeah. This is just general advice to the rest of the world here. This is a lesson for all of you.
Luckily, Dave, there's an easy way to take care of this. You got a Windows machine?
I beg your pardon?
Do you have a Windows machine?
Yes, I do.
If you're doing virus protection, you probably have a Windows machine. Okay, it's pretty easy to do. You open up your control panel and do add remove programs.
Which?
The control panel. If you go, let's see, are you running Windows XP?
Yes.
Okay. Go to Start, and then on the right, when the Start thing pops up, there's going to be a thing called Control Panels.
Go to Start.
Uh-huh. Control Panel.
Yeah.
Well, under Control Panels, you probably will find it if you look around.
Yeah, okay. Control Panel.
Good. There should be a thing called Add Remove Programs.
Right.
Click on that. You want to remove that program.
The Norton. Yeah,
that's right. And after you've removed that program, and you make sure your date is correct, then you download it again and install it.
Okay.
I know. If you're on a slow connection, it's not going to be a fun
thing. Yeah, because I've downloaded it twice with the correct date, but I didn't delete the program.
Yeah, that's right.
You've
got to
remove that program first. And then after you've removed it, you might need to restart your machine because it's a virus protection software. It runs all the time. You might need to restart.
Yeah, it'll tell me to shut it off.
Just do
it.
Restart your machine. Yep. After you've uninstalled it, restart your machine. Then make sure your date's correct and do the whole process over one more time.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Dave. We're going to go to Charlie in Watsonville. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thanks. Interesting topic today because you were talking about handhelds, and I've just kind of got thoroughly obsessed with one, and had some comments.
Which one?
I got the an old Sony TG50.
Cool.
I really, really like. I mean, it's got the keyboard, you know, this micro keyboard, mm-hmm. but it's still pretty darn thin. And there's a lot of them out there refurbished. And I guess it was retailed about $400 or so when it first came out a couple of years ago. And now they're going around 100. And I got mine at Fry's for 125. And
What is this device called again?
It's a Klee. It's the Sony Klee. So it's got a Palm, you know, so it's using Palm OS.
It's the one with a flip-up screen and the full keyboard.
Well, it really is just a static cover. The mm-hmm. screen is built in. It's a 320 by 320. So it's not the biggest one, you know, like the latest Palms. But it's, you know, high res, and the things that the Sony did, which I thought were really good from a usability point of view, was the little thumb wheel, mm-hmm. the scroll wheel, and the back button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, I use both those buttons too. They're great.
Great enhancements. Yeah, exactly. And so I've got, you know, so I've spent, you know, way more than the price of the thing on software.
Cool.
And so I've kind of tried out just about everything under the sun, including all the cool hacks and stuff like that. And a couple of things that I'd like to mention is, why do they still have so little memory? Now, it's true the memory card solves all the problems with storage, but you still run into a bottleneck problem where certain things won't run on from the memory card, like Vindigo, that travel service, which is really cool. And so it still seems like the Microsoft devices still have a base memory, which is, you know, a lot higher. Of course, you have to have a lot more to run Microsoft.
Yeah, the base memory, the devices with some of the highest base memory are like the Tungsten 3, and some of the more recent Palm devices, actually the Tungsten 3 is from a year ago, has 64 megs of base memory.
Do they really? Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is really handy, and actually something the problem that with base memory is that it uses battery power even when it's turned off. So there's a strong incentive to try and keep that as low as possible and stick to expansion memory for all your extra stuff. So devices are now starting to go to having less memory. Even new devices from Microsoft and new devices from Palm are going to having less base memory and having built-in expansion memory.
Well, at least that's a good reason. That's the best reason I've heard. So the other thing I wanted to mention, though, is what I've really gotten into is the books. I'm not a gamer. Mm-hmm. I think I've talked to Lyle about. So I'm a weird geek. I'm not into games at all. And so I've gotten into the amazing capacity of books that you can put on these things.
Yeah.
And that's just blown me away. It's like really, really amazing. It's really cool to have, you know, so much cool literature, and you're never bored. You know, you always have a book to read and stuff like that. And it seems like there's definite lack of standardization in mm-hmm. this particular realm. And so different things, you know, they're sort of tied to the reader.
Do you mean audiobooks or reading?
Textbooks, yeah.
And that screen doesn't hurt your eyes or anything?
No, I love it.
Yeah, the screen's great.
The one I like the best is the Mobi Reader.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so that particular company, you know, has books, and they have their own. The nice thing about Mobi is it's very, very easy to write your own. So you can take anything that's HTML and turn it into a PDA format. Mm-hmm. And you can have links and stuff like that, which is pretty cool. And they have some flexibility with the fonts, and so you just find the font that's best for your eyes. And I find I read more efficiently on that than I do with a paperback book now.
Do they have a converter thing? For example, like if you have a Word document that you want to be putting on there in a, quote, book format, can you put it into their converter and spell it?
Exactly. Their latest reader will read text files or, I think, Word files directly. And it costs about $20 for their new Mobi Creator. It just came out.
Mobi?
Yeah, M-O-B-Y, M-O-B-I.
And you can find that on Google search, I'm sure.
So Mobi, Mobi Pockets. .com is the website.
And that works, I'm assuming, on any Palm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's any Palm device. Yeah, and so that's my favorite by far for readers. Some of the encyclopedias, all of the the Probert series of encyclopedias runs through the Mobi reader and the Encyclopedia Britannica, which is by far the most thorough encyclopedia I found runs with their reader. My big complaint about the Britannica was that they didn't have any built-in links, which I found to be absurd. And so at the bottom of the article, you would see such and such.
Right, you have to type it in or something.
And it's like, well, that should be a link.
But other than that,
they have the most information.
Isn't it just so amazingly cool to think that, a generation ago, people had like an entire set of encyclopedias taking up a wall of their house, and you can carry it in your pocket.
Yep.
Do you actually have lots of cards to carry these books? Is that how you're dealing with it?
Well, I have one 512 card, and it's half full.
Yeah. And you have the entire Encyclopedia Britannica on it.
Well, it's not equivalent. No, it is a smaller version of it. Uh-huh. But, I just bought the classic, it's like the complete classic series, and it's got like all of Shakespeare, all of Dickens, all of Oscar Wilde. It's like, all major classical stuff, right? And I don't know what that's going to be when I try to squeeze all of that in. I probably won't. I'll probably
Charlie, do you currently have the device in front of you?
Actually, I don't. But what would you like?
Well, I want to test something. Can you grab it and turn it on?
Yeah, sure. Hold on.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see if Charlie can look up something as fast as you can look it up.
I like that when Charlie said, "This is the device I have," Chris said, "Oh yeah."
Do you like that device, Chris?
Yeah, the Sony T50 is actually one of the really nice devices. It's kind of a shame Sony has left the PDA market.
They're not doing the Clio anymore.
They've kind of retrenched, probably because they've been beaten up so bad by Apple. So Sony has retrenched back into Japan. They're only doing Clios in Japan now. So if you can get your hands on a Clio at a cheap closeout sale at Fry's, that's a lot of really good PDA for the money right now if you get it discounted.
That's good to know. So this device, how old is it?
I think the T50 is about a year and a half old. About that, yeah.
So it sounds like a good, if you could get it for somebody, it sounds like
I'm
a good PA.
I'm sure you found something to talk about.
No, we talked about the device a little bit. Okay, so Charlie, here's the thing. Now, you already went and got the book, so I'm going to pretend that I already have the Encyclopedia Britannica in front of me, and I'm going to look up the word geek. So go ahead and look up the word geek and tell me when you got it.
Sure.
We'll talk a little bit about the speed at which you can look up something. Assuming that geek is actually in the Encyclopedia Britannica.
There's actually a picture of Miles in the Encyclopedia, yes.
No.
Okay, first I got it. It defaults when you put it on to, like, the last thing you were reading.
Okay.
So you have to go back.
So kind of like your bookmark was already there.
Yeah, so you have to go back to, here's all my encyclopedias.
So you got to find the encyclopedia. So you basically were not in, you weren't in the library at that point.
No.
You were kind of in the other room with the book.
Exactly.
So you wasn't in the library. You're picking up you finally found the G book. You grab it, you start flipping it open. G, E, E. Flip.
This is not a good demo here. Okay.
No, it's perfect, because that's the thing is, you are switching over a little bit. You don't have to carry, 60 pounds of book with you everywhere you go, but there's a little bit of you're working on an electronic device. There's only one thing being shown at the same time. You're flipping through it or using tools, search tools that we're all used to.
Oh, no, you're going to love this.
Oh, what's that?
Not enough memory.
Oh, no.
This happened because it's actually this Vindigo service, which is a really cool service where you can get movies and restaurants and stuff like that for a particular city.
Mm-hmm.
We just went to Phoenix last week, weekend, and so I loaded that on, and I haven't used the encyclopedia since then, and I probably just have too much information.
Too much
Vindigo. It won't let you put it on the card. I have to write to the company.
I've been telling Vindigo that for about 3 years now.
You have?
Yes.
Maybe they'll listen to Charlie, though.
What's their problem?
they're just, they're from New York. They kind of have an attitude.
It's such a cool thing. And it really worked, like we looked for a restaurant and we read the review and it was what they said it was and we had a great time with it.
Yeah, Vindigo's great. You sync it and it gives you like movie times and restaurants and you could like say I want San Francisco and it has all the restaurants in San Francisco in your pocket for like, and you put the corner you're standing on and say I'm looking for a Thai restaurant within 3 blocks and it tells you where to go and how to walk there, which is very cool.
Yeah, but you can only fit like one city and as I just demonstrated, even one city can kind of put you into a problem.
Yes. Well, Charlie, thank you very much for the call. Charlie's the producer of Health Matters on KUSP and called from Watsonville. Health Matters you can find, of course, on 9 a.m. here on KUSP on Saturday morning. Thank you, Charlie. So if you'd like to be like Charlie and give us a call, please do. Phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can send us email by going to geekspeak.org. And just click on the Geek Contact Us. That's it. Fill out that form. We'll get that in our email and respond to it. Pronto. Again, phone numbers if you'd like to do it the old-fashioned way and have your voice broadcasted all over the Central Coast of California, 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Now, we did get an email about iBook G4 SuperDrive versus PowerBook G4 SuperDrive. John, you went ahead and responded to this. Can you fill us in on what you told Joe?
Yeah, I know Apple has released the current generation iBooks. You can get a SuperDrive. For those of you who don't know, SuperDrive, you can burn DVDs and CDs, read DVDs and regular CDs.
This is as opposed to the other Apple-marketed SuperDrives, which have done other things in the past, and they reuse the name. The SuperDrive was
the 800K?
Yeah, it used to be the floppy drive that would also play PC floppies as well as Mac floppies.
And it was 800K as opposed to the 400K.
So why don't they call the new one the super duper drive, you know?
You know, maybe they just had like a whole box of like bumper stickers that said, get a super drive. And so then they're like, you know, we got to reuse these. They're retro, they're cool, we got to do it. So they just had to name their product that way.
I did a quick Google search, and yeah, there's lots of places.
So you can buy a super drive for an iBook, which you can't get one in it.
Right.
SuperDrive is the one that has DVD burner as well.
You will have to install it, and my only experience so far has been installing new hard drives in iBooks, and you have to strip it down
a lot
to the logic board and remove the logic board to get to it. It's not for the faint of heart. I don't know about the CD-ROM drive, and I'm trying to remember. I can't remember if I pulled that out during the operation or not.
But luckily, if you're in Santa Cruz, Joe, so luckily when you break your iBook, John can come down and help you out.
There are places you can take it to have it.
I would
installed.
Recommend taking it someplace because it's a bit of work. Is there a local place that will crack open a?
You know, MC Squared is the only place local that I know that is an Apple authorized repair center.
Right.
There's one more up
on campus up at UCSC. Oh, the bookstore there does do upgrades and such, and they have a great relationship with Apple. I don't know if they sell SuperDrives, and if they don't sell it, they probably won't install it. But I wouldn't be surprised if they do sell it, a SuperDrive for an iBook, that they would install it or at least make it cheap for the installation. So you can give a shot. You want to just call up the UCSC bookstore. I don't know the number.
Do you need to be a student to go there?
You do not.
Excellent.
Anybody can go there and get great prices on hardware.
And if anybody else knows of a good Apple authorized reseller, because Computerware closed down and MC Squared is the only one in the area right now. So if you know of another one, please go ahead and contact the Geeks.
Yeah, you can do that by geekspeak.org and let us know.
Yeah.
And we'll take your calls as well right now with questions and comments about technology. We're open to anything. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. From Santa Cruz, Brant, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
It's a little open-ended to say you're open to anything.
Try us.
It is pretty, by definition, pretty open-ended. Yeah, what's your question?
Okay, Rick? I've got a Sony Vaio, and I'm going to start doing some video editing with a FireWire interface.
Uh-huh.
But I want to put an external FireWire drive on it as well. And I know nothing about FireWire. Are there such things as FireWire hubs and that sort of thing?
Pretty
or
much
what?
Most FireWire external drives will actually have some ports on it to plug in your camera as well.
Okay, so it's easy to do then.
It's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, FireWire tends to be chained, so every FireWire device tends to have two jacks on the back, so you can kind of chain them one after another. I think you technically have up to like 500 and all in a chain.
The only thing that's not really going to have one is that camera, and that's a good thing because when you're using a camera, you got to switch to play mode and record mode and kind of turn it off and off. Sometimes
right.
You eject the disk, and you don't want your hard drive being disconnected all the time. So you're going to want to plug your hard drive in and then plug your camera into your hard drive. Make sure your hard drive is mounted to your operating system already. You can see the hard drive.
Okay.
And then after that, have your camera off, I think, and plug it into and then turn on your camera, and your computer should sense it.
Okay, is there any kind of speed problem as you start stacking FireWire?
No, I don't think you're going
to. It'll default to the lowest device, the speed of the lowest device.
That's right. So that's a little bit of an issue. Your camera's going to be a 400. But you know what? Your Sony Vaio is going to be the slower FireWire. It's not going to be the 800.
I'm afraid so, yeah.
I think you'll be okay. What I would do is try to don't like record and encode at the same time because that's going to be a bit of work.
Okay.
But go ahead and import in. You shouldn't really have a problem.
Okay.
What are you working on, Brent?
Well, actually, we're going to be making something for the radio station.
Uh-huh. What is it? Is it a surprise?
It's a training video.
Ooh, I can't wait to be trained.
So we're going
to
get trained by you on how to use... This is Brent, the senior engineer for KUSP.
We're going to be training people on all sorts of exciting new things.
Does that mean...
exciting old thing.
Oh, good. So I won't be messing up all the time and like switching on the wrong person on air and taking the wrong call and all that.
That's it.
All right.
That's me, actually.
Brant, if you need some help on that, you know my number. You're welcome to give me a ring. I'd love to help you out. Thank you, Brant, for the call. Take care.
Bye.
And we're going to take Marlena. Welcome to GeekSpeak from Santa Cruz.
Marlena, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Please, what's your question?
Okay. I have a beautiful G4 laptop.
Is it white or gray or black?
It's gray.
Okay.
And it's loaded, it's beautiful. A geek friend of mine made sure I had everything that I wanted.
How
and
nice.
I'm so happy with this machine.
But
there's only one problem. And since I am a novice and I'm learning as you go and I'm taking classes.
Where are you taking classes?
At the Senior Network right here at Loudoun Nelson.
Okay. Oh, Loudoun Nelson, not London Nelson. That's good.
No.
Thank you, Loudoun Nelson. Go on.
There's a controversy about that name.
Well, his name was actually London, and it was Loudoun. It was London.
It's spelled London. It's pronounced Loudoun. But then there's a bunch of
controversy. It was spelled incorrectly really on his gravestone is one of the problems.
Okay.
Anyway, it was a gentleman who lived here years ago and passed away and left all his land to future education and community or something to that effect.
And a black American, too.
Yes, he was.
So anyway, everything is right about this machine, except when I put it in sleep mode, I lose my signal. When I come back, to access the internet, the little tiny fan—I don't know if you what it looks like.
Right, it's the airport indicator. Tell you the strength of
up in the
signal.
Bar. That little like stacks
is blank.
Yeah, it's blank.
Fan. Okay. I like that. That's a good name for it. The fan. Mm-hmm. It does look like a fan.
And it's when you say it's blank, so then what do you do?
So I don't have the internet.
Okay. Have you
and
tried?
So this shouldn't be, because basically I should be able to leave this machine on for days, weeks, months.
Yes. Okay,
and
so...
And yet in sleep mode, it drops off.
Okay, so then when you come back up, do you try clicking on that little fan thing? And does
have
your network there? And is that how you reconnect?
Then there's a drop-down menu.
Okay, and you pick your network.
Know.
And then does it ask you for a password or not?
No.
Okay. So it's memorizing your password. It's just not reconnecting to that. Okay. How are you putting your machine to sleep? Are you just closing it?
Well, with the G4, are you familiar with G4?
I've got one in front of me.
Yeah, we both do.
Oh, good. At the top right, there's a little button. And you click on the button, it gives you the option of sleeping or shutting off.
Okay. Well,
so I click on sleep.
Yeah, the way I do it, just to let you know that it actually comes back again, the network comes back again, is I just close the lid. And it puts it to sleep automatically. When I open it back up, the network takes a couple beats, and then it normally reconnects.
I'd be interested.
See, I don't put my little geek friend tell me not to close the machine on sleep, to leave it open slightly for air.
When it's asleep, it really doesn't need airflow.
Yeah.
Really?
And that's your other little geeks telling you that. I mean, who knows who's right?
I've had the titanium laptop.
You're right.
I had the titanium laptop since they first came out, and I've always put them to sleep every way, and I've never had any problem with it. As for the connecting problem, I'm wondering if that's a software issue, is this on like a regular airport base station, or is it?
Yes.
Okay. Are you in front of the machine right now?
No.
Okay. Do you know if you're running Panther or Jaguar?
I'm running 10.3.
Okay.
Panther.
OS 10. That must be Panther.
That is Panther. And have you been doing the software update?
I did it once.
Okay. Do the software update, because it does have a lot of upgrades on network stuff all the time. And I would assume that I'm going to guess and I'm going to hope to be right. By the way, the assumption that because I do a weekly radio show called Geek Speak that I know what I'm talking about is guesswork at best. In any case, what you want to do is upgrade, do the software update. You go up to the Apple, do software, go to software update, and then update, and you might see wireless network stuff in that, and choose to upgrade all that, and maybe that won't happen anymore for you. One question for you, one last final question for you. This network that you're connecting to, what's the hub? What type of device is it?
I don't know what you mean.
What is giving you wireless access?
It's an airport.
Airport.
Oh, it's an airport. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, should connect for you. No problem.
There are some updates for airports, too.
Yeah. That's a little harder to do.
May or may not solve this problem. But the first thing I do is, it's free to upgrade your software. So that would be the first place to start.
Okay,
definitely.
Then.
Good luck.
And if that doesn't work, go ahead and email us.
Yeah.
All right.
Contact the Geeks.
Yeah, click on contact
us. What is your email?
Well, it's geeks@geekspeak.org, but don't tell anybody that. instead, go ahead and go to geekspeak.org and click on contact us and fill out that form. That way we know where you're from and all of us get it at the same time.
Geeks.org?
Yep.
Geekspeak.org.
No slash. Just go there and then click on contact us.
Yeah, there's a button on the nav bar that says like articles,
shows.
Thank you
so much for helping.
Thank you very much for calling.
And you might also need to change your internet settings from capital I to lowercase I. You know, that could be an important thing right now.
Chris, one more call we're going to take today from Aptos. We're going to talk to Gary. Gary, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. I have an old PowerBook 150 that I bought 1,000 years ago.
I remember those.
And I don't really like to spend a lot of time in front of the computer. And I'm wondering if I can just, but I like the size of it. I'm wondering if I can have it upgraded so that it'll accommodate DSL and it will, if I could upgrade the memory and have it be like a...
No. A real machine?
It won't accommodate DSL, unfortunately.
It's like upgrading your poodle to be a racehorse.
No, the 150?
Yeah.
Or am I thinking of the 145B? There was one that's like a stripped-down version of the PowerBook. Is this the stripped-down version? That was like really, it was nice and inexpensive, and it was a pretty decent machine.
It wasn't so expensive. I think it was about $1,200.
Ouch. Yeah. What color is it?
It's a deep gray. And I'm opening it up right now. Yeah, PowerBook 150, Apple. And
you know, the speed that machine runs at, a modem connection is going to be about as fast as you're going to be able to handle.
Does it have Ethernet plugged in?
No, it doesn't have it.
On the outside of the machine, around the edges and stuff, is there a large jack, like a larger phone jack?
The AC cord thing?
There's an AC cord. There should be a phone jack for plugging in your modem. What other plugs are there? There's another one that looks like a large phone.
Seriously, Dad, would have an Ethernet jack.
You know, it does have a larger... I'm looking in the back now. It has only three...
It doesn't have a built-in one.
No, basically, to upgrade this machine, not really. How's that?
It does have an exterior modem that, you know, it was called the gold, I think, or the
Global Village
Platinum or something.
Right.
So there's no way I can use this.
You can hook it up via internet and networking. Yeah, you can use a modem. In fact, that's the recommended way of doing it. It is possible to connect it to an Ethernet network. If you want to email Geeks, go up to geekspeak.org and send us an email. I can send you a link I've got here that'll tell you how to do it. But it's not really recommended.
It's not fun. And I got to say that, unfortunately, I mean, I just recently gave away, kind of as doorstops, an old Mac Plus. Uh-huh. And the Mac Plus, when it first came out, was like $2,200.
Uh-huh.
So the machines just degrade quickly. I mean, not that quickly. I mean, younger than us, but they still go away pretty quickly. And unfortunately, this one's kind of at the end of its life.
Okay. Well, I hear what you're saying. I won't bother with this. But
sorry.
I'm wondering if I could possibly... buy a PowerBook, a used PowerBook that would accommodate a DSL and, you know, be fairly decent and for like under $300 or $400?
No.
Well, you can, yes, but it won't be much of a step up from where you are.
And Gary, we're going to have to say goodbye to you today.
Okay,
thank
very
you very
good.
Much for the call.
Thank you.
Martinelli's Gold Medal Apple Juice provided support for this program. Martinelli's is all-natural, 100% juice from U.S.-grown fresh apples, not from concentrate, with no additives of any kind. Martinelli's Gold Medal Apple Juice, since 1868.
Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The geeks this morning were Miles Elam and John Tracy, and our geek from San Francisco, Chris Dunphy, talking about handheld devices. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, geeks, for joining us.
It's great to be back.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, Chris, we get down here more often. With your new job, I hope you can do that more.
I will. I no longer have Friday morning meetings. So.
Woohoo! Well, we're going to be here next week, so you can come back and do it then if you'd like. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for participating in GeekSpeak. To those of you that called in, thanks for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who really wants to listen to that? Next week on GeekSpeak, we're going to be talking a little bit more about what we would like, our wishes and such for the holiday season. Coming up next is Open Road, and at 1 p.m., Two Steps from the Blues with Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Ardo, or on the web at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Thank you for tuning in.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Carol Van Dam. The widely used painkiller Celebrex is staying on the market despite reports by its maker that a study it conducted found an increased risk of heart attacks to patients taking the drug. The drug company Pfizer says another study found no such increase in risk. Celebrex is a painkiller like Vioxx, which